It affects actually quite a number of people who may be discriminated against because they don't conform to gender stereotypes.
There's a lot of gay content in the movie, and purposely so. I don't think it's only a gay film. I think that anything that can make you feel not accepted is at its core what the movie is trying to talk about.
You're my best friend!
Get away from me, you freak!
I'm so
welcome to This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. Anglicans address the aftermath of a gay Episcopal bishop's elevation. California clarifies sex and gender in a major anti-bias bill. And outsiders become insiders when drama teens go to camp. Those stories and more this week, now that you've discovered This Way Out.
Cindy Friedman.
And I'm Christopher Gall.
With News Wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending August 9th, 2003. The Anglican Church's U.S. branch, the Episcopalians, this week confirmed the denomination's first openly sexually active gay bishop and also opened the door for priests and congregations to hold commitment ceremonies for gay and lesbian couples. The decisions by the triennial U.S. National General Convention, representing more than 2 million Episcopalians, follow some 30 years of vigorous debate on gay issues. Yet the moves have rocked the 77 million-member global Anglican Communion as nothing else since the ordination of women. The World Church's policy, reaffirmed by an overwhelming vote of all its bishops in 1998, is that homosexual acts are incompatible with Scripture.
Ken and Jean Robinson, previously a candidate for several other U.S. bishoprics, was elected by the congregations in his home diocese of New Hampshire, where he's assisted the retiring bishop for many years. For 13 years, he's been openly partnered with Mark Andrew, following a most amicable divorce from a wife who had always known of his gay orientation. While British gay activist Canon Geoffrey John, who recently withdrew from his appointment to serve as the Bishop of Reading for the sake of church unity, had long been and vowed to remain celibate, Robinson has never made any such claim. When a convention committee asked him why God created sexuality if not for procreation, father of two Robinson said, "I believe that God gave us the gift of sexuality so that we might express with our bodies the love that's in our hearts. I think that's true of marriage, and I think that's why we hold marriage to be a sacrament. In my relationship with my partner, I'm able to express the deep love that's in my heart, and in his unfailing and unquestioning love of me, I experience just a little bit of the kind of never-ending, never-failing love that God has for me. So it's sacramental for me."
Once that committee had sent its ratification on for floor votes, the bicameral convention's House of Deputies, which represents lay people and lower-level priests, approved Robinson's elevation to bishop by a 2-to-1 margin. Debate was impassioned but dignified. The vote in the House of Bishops was briefly delayed by some last-gasp, sexually-tinged allegations against Robinson, which proved quite flimsy under investigation by the church. The U.S. bishops went on to approve Robinson for consecration by a margin of 3-2.
While gays and lesbians and their allies rejoiced, some bishops, priests, and lay delegates walked out of the convention in protest, although national leadership did not view it as a mass action. Some who did not boycott the convention attended with ashes on their foreheads as a penance for Robinson's confirmation. Perhaps as many as 24 conservative bishops have signed a statement calling on leaders of the global church to intervene in what they called a pastoral emergency.
Even before the U.S. convention, some of those leaders had warned of a split in the event of Robinson's confirmation, and some foreign bishops had even attended the U.S. meeting. The so-called first among equals in the Anglican Church is the Archbishop of Canterbury, Rowan Williams, who personally supports ordination and marriage of gays and lesbians. He's praying that no schism will result, but he said he foresaw what he called difficult days ahead and called a special meeting of the church's 38 regional primates for October in Britain. That same month, Robinson will be appearing at a convention of Britain's Anglican, Lesbian, and Gay Christian movement, while back in the U.S., conservatives will be meeting to consider their next move. Robinson's consecration as the 9th Bishop of New Hampshire is scheduled for November 2nd.
Canada has already been weathering its own international firestorm since the Vancouver Area Diocese of Westminster began blessings for same-gender couples, and while no formal or general position has been taken, there are indications that some Canadian Anglicans are content to view the Episcopalian action as a valid exercise of local control.
Primate of the Southern Cone, South America, Archbishop Greg Venables, views the threat of schism as a serious one, calling the Episcopalians and the Church of England culturally deaf and warning that the primates of the Global South are mobilizing themselves.
About half of the world's Anglicans are Africans. The vehemently anti-gay leader of the Anglican region with the largest membership, Archbishop Peter Ekinola, head of Nigeria's 17.5 million Anglicans, called Robinson's elevation a satanic attack on God's church. It's quite possible that Nigeria will declare itself out of communion with the Episcopalians, as it already has with Canada's new Westminster diocese.
All of Kenya's bishops issued a joint statement saying they would consider breaking ties with any diocese that ordains anyone with even a history of homosexual acts or blesses same-gender couples, describing any such diocese as having kicked itself out of the Anglican Communion. Church leaders in East, West, and Central Africa have voiced strong opposition to Robinson's elevation.
Even the much more gay-accepting Archbishop of Southern Africa, Njunkunkulu Ndangani, believes that gay and lesbian clergy must remain celibate, although he said his region must support that it was a correct process that confirmed Robinson within the U.S. province of that church.
Uganda's Anglican bishops have already announced that they will not have any fellowship with a diocese that consecrates homosexuals or allows homosexual marriages.
The bishops of the Southeast Asia region will be meeting in the coming week and may well also cut ties with the U.S.
After Robinson's confirmation, the Episcopal General Convention's resolution on blessing gay and lesbian couples was almost anticlimactic, although still a significant change from its previous stance and compared to most other U.S. Christian denominations. Activists had hoped the meeting would direct the national leadership to draft formal rituals for those ceremonies and to make them available throughout the U.S. denomination, but that didn't happen. Instead, the bishops amended the resolution that they and the House of Deputies then approved by substantial margins to essentially authorize bishops to allow individual priests and congregations to perform gay and lesbian commitment ceremonies in their churches if they choose. Quite a few such ceremonies have been performed without official acknowledgement from the national body, but it's believed that more will now go ahead. Currently, in the 110 U.S. dioceses, three bishops have formally approved blessing gay and lesbian couples, many bishops have explicitly prohibited them, and about 20 bishops have quietly left the decision to individual congregations and priests. Even under the new resolution, no individual congregations or clergy can be required to hold commitment ceremonies.
That's considerably more unity on the gay and lesbian marriage issue than the world's Lutheran churches were able to achieve as they convened in Canada at the end of July. Representatives of the more than 60 million Lutherans in 76 nations meet every 6 years under the auspices of the Sweden-based Lutheran World Federation, whose leader admitted that differences over homosexuality were something they couldn't solve at this time. Some liberal delegates wanted to at least study the concept of blessing same-gender couples, but they could not even win a specific mention of that in what was ultimately described as a study of issues of marriage, family, and human sexuality in a manner appropriate to the needs of each member church. While some liberals wanted a statement criticizing cultural taboos that prevent even discussion of homosexuality, they ended up with a watered-down reference to the diversity within the communion on matters of human sexuality. Conservatives, on the other hand, failed in their attempt to explicitly define family as the union of a man and a woman.
The Vatican's official publication last week of a document denouncing all legal recognition of same-gender couples and any politicians who would support it came in for considerable criticism at this week's Pride events in the Netherlands and Canada. The Netherlands, of course, was the first nation to extend full legal marriage rights to gay and lesbian couples. This week, more than 300,000 people turned out for Amsterdam's unique Pride Parade, in which the term float is literal, as decorated boats processed down the city's canals. This year, there were 80 boats, many bearing banners denouncing the Pope.
Legal marriages are already being performed in two Canadian provinces, Although the Canadian Supreme Court has refused to fast-track its review of the federal government's draft bill for an inclusive definition of marriage, delaying its introduction at least into next year. Vancouver observed Pride this week for the 25th year, this time with legal marriage in British Columbia to celebrate. Crowd estimates ranged up to 140,000, which openly lesbian city councillor Ellen Woodsworth, among others, believes reflects in part a community that's standing up for separation of church and state in defiance of the Vatican attack.
And finally, Montreal's 10th Pride observance, called Diversité, this week drew some 800,000 spectators to watch about 1,000 marchers. It had a strong emphasis on marriage, including a number of marchers wearing wedding attire and a giant wedding cake float. One male couple were both mockingly dressed as popes themselves and joked to the crowd that they were all going to hell. Local marriage activist couple Michael Hendricks and Renee LaBeouf marched in tuxes and top hats and won some of their loudest ovations outside a major Catholic cathedral on the parade route. A court ruling to establish legal marriage in Quebec for them and others is currently under appeal. But the Montreal March also featured Canada's first legally married gay male couple, Kevin Bourassa and Joe Varnell, who tied the knot in Ontario. Varnell told the Catholic Church via reporters, "We will not come into your church until you who can receive communion and who can't. Don't come into my government's house and tell me who can marry and who can't." One placard put it more simply, "Jean-Paul II est odieux."
That's News Wrap for the week ending August 9th, 2003, written by Cindy Friedman and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles.
Follow the news in your area. An informed community is a strong community. For This Way Out, I'm Cindy Friedman.
And I'm Christopher Dahl.
Hit the story. Now a gay writer-director has brought his teen years memoir to the screen. In one way or another, it's your story, too, as you'll find out later in the program. Transgenders have recently won civil rights protections in three U.S. jurisdictions. Pennsylvania Governor Ed Rendell issued an executive order prohibiting employment discrimination in state executive branch agencies based on gender identity or expression. Meanwhile, the San Diego, California City Council voted to protect transgenders under their municipal human dignity ordinance. But the largest number of transgenders by far will benefit from California's new statewide ban on housing and job discrimination. Embattled Democratic Governor Gray Davis, who's counting on queer support in the face of a historic recall election against him in October, quietly signed the bill on the same day he put the final touches on the state's notoriously overdue budget. With production assistance from Paul Jaffe, This Way Out's Brian Goble reports from San Francisco.
The bill was sponsored by openly gay assemblyman Mark Leno. It was inspired by San Francisco's staggering 70% unemployment rate for the city's transgendered residents. Leno says that's more than 12 times the national average.
I know so many people who have held positions of great responsibility, have great expertise and talent and experience in any number of fields, and then as a result of their transitioning to their new gender identity, can no longer find any work whatsoever.
The new law goes into effect in January. It amends the state's Fair Employment and Housing Act to include language that bans discrimination against individuals who are born of one gender but may look or act like the other. Shannon Minter is with the National Center for Lesbian Rights.
It would include men who are perceived to be
feminine or women who are perceived to be masculine. So it affects actually quite a number of people who may be discriminated against because they don't conform to gender stereotypes.
California will now fall in line with three other American states and most of Europe, which have already outlawed discrimination against transgendered people. Leno called it an important civil rights victory, especially now.
The radical right forces, which are represented so clearly by the Pope and the President and the Attorney General, continue to declare war on social progress, and I think that this bill, which is now state law, is a victory and challenges the controlling regressive forces.
And those forces, say gay rights advocates, are the same forces helping to drive the effort to get rid of Governor Davis, who now finds himself fighting for his political life. The Democratic governor faces an October 7th recall election, a contest that has drawn a long list of candidates, including the Republican actor Arnold Schwarzenegger. Despite his unpopularity in the polls, Jeff Kors with Equality California, a gay lobbying group, says Davis has emerged as a champion of gay rights.
The distinction between him and his predecessors is about as extreme as you can get. In the 16 years when Governor Duke Majin and Governor Wilson were in place, there was not one openly lesbian or gay, bisexual, or transgender judge appointed to the bench. There were vetoes of the most basic bills that would ensure that people couldn't be fired simply because they were gay. And, you know, Governor Davis has an incredible number of openly gay staff people. He has signed more pro-gay rights, civil rights legislation without a court mandating it than any governor in the country.
Although Davis has said his religion prevents him from supporting gay marriage, a landmark bill expected to arrive on his desk before the election will serve as a test that Kors predicts he'll probably pass. The bill would afford gays and lesbians virtually all of the same rights enjoyed by married couples.
We're very optimistic he'll sign it, and I think if he comes out for it early, he will really help galvanize the community to really be actively out there doing things.
As expected, conservative and religious groups are trying to defeat the bill. They say it conflicts with an initiative approved in 2000 by California voters that defines marriage as a relationship between a male and a female. They've threatened to take the issue to court if it becomes law. But supporters of the bill say the point is moot since it would not legalize gay marriage. The legislation, according to gay activists, could actually bolster the governor's chances of staying in office. For This Way Out, I'm Brian Goebel in San Francisco.
Hello, I'm Carol.
And I'm Maria.
And together we're Zrazy. And we're crazy about This Way Out,
the international lesbian and gay radio magazine.
At the Sundance Film Festival, where individuality and independence are the rule, a cinematic ode to the outsider in everyone was bound to be a hit. Writer-director Todd Graff's Camp may already be screening at a theater near you. This Way Out's Steve Pride has a preview and chats with Graff and some of his stars. Feel free to sing along.
Everyone thinks that I'm a freak, the way I dress, the way I speak. I'm too thin, I hate my voice. I'd switch lives if I had the choice. I'll be tall and rich someday. Everything will go my way. Someday, someday.
Times are changing, but gay teens are still often on the outside of high school society. But the new motion picture Camp takes us to a place where the roles are reversed. An upside-down paradise based on a real place, where the heterosexual guy is the one trying to fit in, theater geeks are cool, and Stephen Sondheim is a god.
The film was inspired by a summer camp called Stage Door Manor.
Writer-director Todd Graff.
Where I went as a kid and worked subsequently, which is a place where kids go to learn to be actors. And beyond that, these kids who tend to be isolated and not feel like they fit in actually have this place where everybody is like them when they get off the bus.
When I'm here, I'm still here.
There's a lot of gay content in the movie, and purposely so. I don't think it's only a gay film. I think that there are feelings that are brought up by dealing with your sexuality when you're an adolescent, that although the specifics of that is being gay, they are kindred to the feelings that are brought up by feeling that you're overweight or that you're not good looking enough or that you're, you know, any number of things. And I think that anything that can make you feel not accepted is at its core what the movie is trying to talk about.
The story focuses on a trio of campers: Michael, a gay Latino with acne and family issues; Ellen, a sweet but never popular girl; and Vlad, a handsome, all-American heterosexual boy. Probably. Maybe.
The truth is, I was trying to be true to my experience at the real camp, and I think that the fact that the central romance is heterosexual is true, and yet it's a very manipulative, odd romance. You know, they barely end up together at the end, and they only end up together because the girl realizes that she just has to start somewhere with a boy. And so, okay, this boy is kind of a jerk, but he's a good-looking jerk, and I'm just going to go for it. And at some point, I'm going to stop only hanging out with boys who wear dresses, or I'm never going to get laid. And that idea that that's the central heterosexual romance with a guy who 5 minutes, not even 5 minutes before that decision gets made by the girl, comes to within inches of making out with another boy, you know, it's muddy and purposely muddy in terms of all the sexualities and the relationships, even Jill and Fritzy.
I'll do anything you say.
No.
You're my best friend.
Get away from me, you freak.
Although there's no lesbian content per se, because I thought they were a little too young to actually act on it. You know, the characters would be a little too young. There's still, you know, a 14-year-old girl washing out the panties of a 15-year-old girl in the sink, you know, and being ostracized for it. So it's purposely murky.
Good-looking newcomer Daniel Lederle plays Vlad, a straight boy who's willing to do anything to be liked.
I sing for you and only you. Wherever I go, I find you. You're in the sound of every hello, in everything I do. You're the song I was destined to know, and I only sing for you.
There wasn't a kiss ever, actually. I never did kiss Robin, because it didn't totally work. It didn't fit for me. What fit for my Vlad was, at that point, Vlad had lost everything, and he was about to lose his best friend at the camp. And the friendship was real, and the sexual tension, it was real, but it was more of like ego-based, and it was like, you know, I'd draw on that attention for an ego boost or something. But I did hold that card, and when he almost did lose his best friend at camp, he was willing to play that card. But unfortunately, in the scene, Michael doesn't believe him, you know, because it just didn't work, you know. There were other ways it was going to go, too. You know, the whole straight guys do so-and-so with gay guys all the time, you know. But that would have sort of lessened it. Then it would have been about getting your rocks off or something, but it wasn't. It was about maintaining a friendship, and it was bigger than that. You know, it was about relationships. It wasn't about sex.
Robin DeJesus plays Michael, a flamboyantly gay kid with acne and self-esteem issues, a role that hit close to home.
He offers them a rose and some quiet prose about dancing in a shimmering ballroom. 'Cause you never know when they will bloom.
Camp was very, very surreal. It was a big eye-opener for me because I was always told that I wasn't good enough for this business, that I was too small, or people weren't accepting enough of my kind, as they say. And by getting an acting job in a film, my first audition, less than a month out of high school, it gave me such an ego boost. Like, it made me think I can actually have a career in this. I can actually make it, whereas before I was being told, you know, this is, it isn't the right thing for me.
Surprise! moment I have everything I want. So I'll give this wish to you guys.
And what wish does writer-director Todd Graff have for the gay kids who see his film?
I hope they take away that they shouldn't listen to anybody trying to normalize them, that being normalized is not a good thing, and very often that comes from people who love them. And because they know these people love them, they feel that why would this person be wrong or leading me astray? And sometimes it's with the best intentions they're being led astray. But in fact, they should celebrate the things that are the outsider in them, and that they won't always be 15 years old, and they will become old enough to move to the East Village, and they will be on the cutting edge of culture. And it's just, they have to be okay. They have to be safe and okay long enough to become old enough to actually find the community of their own.
Camp is an IFC Films release. For more information, visit their website at campthemovie.com. This is Steve Pride. Thanks for listening.
Here's where I stand. Here's who I am. Love me, but don't tell me who I have to be. Here's who I am. I'm what you see. You said I had to change, and I was trying, but my heart. Child any longer, I am stronger. Here's where I stand, here's who I am. Help me to move on, but please don't tell me.
Thanks for tuning in to This Way Out, the International Lesbian and Gay Radio Magazine. This week, Cindy Friedman, Christopher Gall, Prinsbury, Graham Underhill, Rex Walkner, Brian Goble, and Steve Pride contributed program material. Thanks also to Paul Jaffe and J.D. Doyle. You heard Pronouns from The Sissy Show, Teen Freak by David Brown, and Here's Where I Stand by Tiffany Taylor and the cast of Camp. Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. Remember, you can also listen to This Way Out anytime online, exclusively on Planet Out. There's a link at our website, thiswayout.org. Some This Way Out operating expenses are funded through direct charitable donations from our listeners. Thank you. To find out how you can help keep This Way Out on the air and get some queer audio history and timeless music in the bargain, please visit our website at thiswayout.org, email us at tworadio@aol.com, or write to us at Post Office Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. And thanks to AlternaBid and the Stonewall Society, you can still bid on some terrific items in an online auction to benefit This Way Out. Look for the This Way Out auction area at AlternaBid.com. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and the entire This Way Out family, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks for listening on KUNM Albuquerque, New Mexico, Contact FM Hamilton, New Zealand, WEOS Geneva, New York, and more than 150 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. You just gotta stay tuned.